Hello and welcome to the Health Hacks Podcast, the podcast for high-performing professional females looking for practical ways to optimize all areas of their health and wellness. At Health Hacks, we understand that as a busy female, you wear numerous hats throughout your working week. You're trying to juggle it all, while also looking to carve out time to prioritize your own goals. It's challenging. It's therefore our mission to channel your energy into the areas that are going to help give you the biggest bang for your buck, to really make significant changes to your lifestyle in the most efficient way possible. So at the moment, if you feel as though you need more energy, you want to feel more productive to improve the quality of your sleep, to lower stress, to increase confidence, to show up better in both your personal and your professional relationships, this podcast is for you. If it's time you prioritize your health, learn to fuel your body, found time for exercise, and said goodbye to fad diets and inconsistent behaviors for good, this podcast is for you. If it's time for you to step into the shoes of the high performer you know you can be, this is the right podcast for you. Join me and my guests as we take you through the Health Hacks Podcast. Hello, this week on the podcast, we have the wonderful Jen Trepik. Jen is a health coach based in New York, and you're going to love this episode. Her energy is so infectious. She was an absolute joy to have on and record with, and she brings a ton of value to this episode. And this one will be great if you've been following week to week, which I hope you do. I hope you tune into us every single Tuesday. But if you've been listening to the podcast, particularly January onwards, there's a bit of a theme going on discussing relationship with food. And this is a really nice addition to this wider conversation and series of episodes. So thank you, Jen, so much for your contribution to Health Hacks this week. As I say every single week, if you enjoy what we do on the platform and you'd love to show your support, there are two ways predominantly to do that. The first one, hit the like or the follow or the subscribe, whichever button it happens to be on your chosen podcast platform. You're probably listening to me on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you hit that button, we'll arrive to your inbox every single week in your podcast inbox. You will never need to search for Health Hacks again. Or if there is someone in your life who you know is embarking on a health journey in 2024, perhaps over a cup of coffee or a walk or at work, you've had a little chat and they are looking to make changes to their diet particularly, this would be a wonderful episode for them to start with. Send them this episode of Health Hacks and let's spread our message. We're now streaming in 26 countries worldwide, which is incredible. So if there is someone in your life who you think would also enjoy the conversations that we have, please do send it to them. Without further ado, let's kick off this week with Jen Trepik. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Health Hacks Podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Jen Trepik. Jen is a health and nutrition coach, as well as a business consultant and podcast host as well. I always feel slightly on the spot when I've got other podcast hosts with me. I love your podcast name, Salad with a Side of Fries. I think we can all relate to that. We've lived and breathed it. Jen, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about you and where you have arrived to in your coaching journey.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to chat. I came to all this wellness stuff through my own saga. I call it a saga. I feel like the word journey doesn't do it justice, right? For what it was, there was drama and ups and downs. And it was really trying to figure out my own weight and my own health and feeling like at times I would just breathe and gain weight. And at times I felt like, you know, I was ticking all the boxes in my career, in life, in all the things except this one thing. Like it was always this running dialogue in the back of my mind. And eventually I learned the curriculum that I've now based my entire practice on. And it completely changed my life. Like I felt like this was the nutrition education we're all supposed to know, but nobody ever taught us. And I was like, everybody deserves this. And I set out on a mission to pay it forward and help people help themselves with this information. And my background is really in business and marketing. And so with everything I do, everything sort of comes together. You know, when I'm working with small business owners, you know, our personal wellness is a big piece of that. When I'm working with a health coaching client, how they're sort of juggling all the balls and fitting everything in becomes as much of the conversation as here's how we eat, right? For energy, for our mood, for all of the things that we want to do in life that really matter, so that we can kind of eliminate, if not the very least, turn down the volume on that constant chatter in the back of our mind, because then it frees up all this brain space to go to things that really matter.
Yeah.
You know, so I started my health coaching practice on the side in late 2007. I left my full-time job in hedge funds in July of 2019, launched Salad with a Side of Fries in August of 2019. And now here we are. I get to sit here and talk to you.
I probably don't need to ask for those listening. They can't see how much energy Jen has. And you can probably hear it, but I probably don't need to ask. Have you ever looked back since 2019? Have you looked back at all?
Oh man, no way. But it's funny. I feel like even at that time, I left my full-time job and I just said, I'm just going to focus on my own stuff for a minute. Like, I've never actually done that. And then the headhunter that I used to work with would call me and he'd say, okay, I have this. And I'm like, I'm not ready yet. You know, and then he'd call a month later, I'm not ready yet. I feel like I never really made this giant, massive decision.
Yeah.
And I think that also took the pressure off. But now, sitting where I am, there is no way I could go back.
So there will be a time then when you were juggling your quote unquote real job and the side hustle. When did you sleep? How did you fit it all in? Did
right.
that up?
Well, it's funny. I definitely did not sleep enough. There were times where I would do more with my business and times that I would do less with my business. And that's sort of the beauty of a side hustle, that it's not your bread and butter and making sure there's a roof over your head. And so there is a little bit of flexibility there. So there were times where it was this thing in my back pocket. And then there were times where I'd be, you know, really focused on it and dedicating a lot of time. And it kind of depends.
Yeah.
But
I think it's really inspiring for women who are potentially sitting here listening to this episode, and perhaps they don't get the ultimate fulfillment they want from their 9-to-5 role, and they've maybe thought about what else could I do? I could carve out extra time. Where could that go? I always think it's really inspiring to hear about those who have made that a success. I love that you did it gradually, or you did it seamlessly. I was pushed. I'll be honest, I was pushed into rather than choosing to. But I think it's always really interesting to hear different stories and journeys, and ultimately how individuals have carved and created a life that they love and that gives them the energy that you obviously have. Jen, you mentioned a curriculum around health, and I think it would be an injustice for me on the behalf of the listener not to ask a little bit more, because you had such conviction about this, the teachings and the learnings that you had. One, where did it come from? Where did you gain your educational knowledge? And what did you learn?
Yeah, so I worked with a coach, and the curriculum is based on a book by Dr. Sherry Lieberman called Dare to Lose. Now, Dr. Sherry was... the book is like very 90s in its, you know, aesthetic, right? And its approach. But it was really, Dr. Sherry was like at the forefront of understanding and teaching functional nutrition. And the big piece of it all is how to eat more than what to eat, because we don't need someone to tell us to choose a cucumber over a Twix. Right? That's not the challenge. There are moments where that's easier than others. And why is that? Mm-hmm. And how come there are times when I feel like I would breathe and gain weight? Yeah. Right? So the curriculum starts focusing on teaching, maybe for the first time, how the body processes food and what the body does with food. And then how to eat to keep our blood sugar balanced, because what we see in the research and metabolic health and what people know more and more now, but Dr. Sherry was really like the first one to talk about, is that whether we are burning fat or storing fat is often a function of blood sugar. And so we can choose foods and pair foods together, right? How we eat, such that we can keep our blood sugar stable, where we're never adding to our fat stores. And in time, our body will release the fat stores it's been holding on to. And then we also get into all the things that make this not quite so easy, right? It can be simple once we understand, then there's life, right? So it's sleep and stress and activity and events and travel and habits and all the other things that kind of complicate this process,
yeah.
Right? So the curriculum, so to speak, teaches this education and is really well-rounded on all of the elements, such that it shifted everything for me from food decisions and even habit decisions, right? All these choices shifted from being emotional of like, why do I suck? Why can't I just not eat the free croissant in the kitchen at work? To, oh, wait a minute. I get why that's appealing to me right now. What I really need is this. And then let me see how I feel about the croissant. Mm-hmm. So it shifted this to being logical rather than emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I often say, like, I kicked my food issues.
Yeah.
Because I understood what was going on. And then I could make choices rather than feeling like I was at the mercy of whatever whim was happening in my body.
Yeah. Jen, you've set this up so beautifully. I haven't actually mentioned that the topic of today's podcast is going to be on the connection between food and mood. But the way we're actually going to approach this is looking at the science behind it, then the real life examples and the real life drivers. So I believe, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I believe that is really kind of the underpinning of how you learn about food, was learn why this makes sense, learn why I'm having these responses to food, educate myself around that, and then I can actually start to apply that knowledge in real life, theory and practice, right?
Exactly. I mean, I believe the difference between knowing what to do and actually doing it is understanding why.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like I said, we all know the salad versus, you know, the bowl of pasta, not to demonize the pasta. That's not the point, right? But we know that there's a difference there. Knowing that, though, doesn't necessarily change in the moment that we're looking at a menu going, all I want is the pasta.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like, how quickly can I get out of work to go have a glass of wine?
Yeah.
Right? So for me, it was understanding that why that made all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. So why don't we dive into then our today's topic and an area that you're an expert in, around the why food and mood are connected. What is
connection
in the body? And then we can maybe go into what that actually looks like in real life.
Yeah. So, and there are a lot of pieces at play here,
mm-hmm.
right? Fundamentally, mood is a function of neurotransmitters, right? These chemicals in the body that signal different things. Neurotransmitter imbalance can be caused by, right, a handful of things, like our chronic stress, the toxins in our environment, right? We think of not just the air we breathe, right? I live in New York City. There are a lot of cars, right? There are places with much cleaner air than New York City. And then we also think about toxins that we don't realize that are maybe in our furniture, right? So our body is constantly battling these toxins around us. Our genetics certainly play a factor. Sensory overload is a big one these days as we are all multitasking and, you know, watching one thing on television with our phone in front of us and all the alerts, right? That sensory overload is real in the body. You know, alcohol, gut health or lack thereof, right? Bowel dysfunction is going to play a role. And then, of course, the food choices, right? Our body, in order to create neurotransmitters, requires nutrients. Think of it like raw materials, right? Like gasoline in your car doesn't come out of the ground as gasoline, right? Mm-hmm. There's a process that happens. So neurotransmitters in the body don't just come out of nowhere either, right? We need these raw materials from our nutrition to build the neurotransmitters for our moods, right? There, the other piece to a lot of this is in real life, we try to mind over matter a craving, right? We try to mind over matter the stress, right? Whatever it might be. The vagus nerve, cranial nerve X, the vagus nerve is the literal connection between the gut and the brain. So here's where it gets really interesting. Think of the vagus nerve as like a 5-lane highway. Okay. 3 of the lanes go gut to brain. 2 lanes go brain to gut. So we will never outthink the biology of what we're consuming in our nutrition or not.
Yep, absolutely. Understood. And I think one of the things I wanted to ask you about that was, I think it makes so much sense. And then we see the croissant or we see the something and our brain is telling us that will make us happy. And our gut is telling us the exact opposite, right? So there becomes the real life struggle.
Right. So when we are, especially in a stress state,
yeah,
right? There's so many elements at play. Cortisol creates cravings mm-hmm. for that which will be fast fuel, mm-hmm. right? The brain is looking for that high, which is that fast fuel. So the craving for the croissant versus the, you know, carrot stick is real because chemically our body is like easiest path to where I want to go is that fast fuel, the croissant, mm-hmm. right? In reality, for the sustained health, for the actual neurotransmitter health, for the actual improved mood, we need those nutrients. So it becomes the difference between short-term and longer-term, right? Think about how long does it take before we're then beating ourselves up over the croissant, right? So did it really make us feel better? I don't know, you know? Yeah. So there's a bit of a balance in there. But even thinking, you know, the pro-inflammatory foods that we crave, when we're in that state, right? Pro-inflammatory, they're creating more inflammation, more oxidative stress in the body. Oxidative stress is actually one of the risk factors for cognitive decline, partly because of the impact on blood flow. We have to have proper blood flow, especially to the brain, but throughout the body, in order to be able to have energy and feel good and learn and do the complex mental activities, right? So when we have all of that overwhelm, we're using up all that fuel really quickly in the brain. And the brain's like, but I'm supposed to keep going. So I need something quick, right? And that's where a lot of those cravings come from. Mm-hmm. Not to mention that sweet and salt and fat are these addictive flavors. And so, you know, and when our blood sugar drops, we're also craving that which is going to bring it back up quickly, right? So it's all these factors sort of play together in similar ways.
Absolutely. And is that where we are going wrong, do you feel, in your eyes, is that we're playing the short-term game rather than considering how we feel in the long run? Is that generally what you see?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of factors, but that's a big piece of it, right? In that moment when we're craving the candy, our brain and our body is like hyper-focused on that candy because its needs are immediate. Yep. And then we might have it and then afterwards go, why did I eat that? Yep. Right? And an hour later, 20 minutes later, we're going, oh, I need something else. What is wrong with me?
Yeah.
We're and there's actually nothing wrong with you. It's chemical. Yep. But because we're sort of in that, you know, push and pull, that little battle within ourselves, we feel like we're failing, but that's not at all what's happening, right? It's very chemical in the body.
Jen, how do you prevent clients of yours or individuals that you coach get into a situation to avoid that? Because that's a real struggle of willpower. We've all done it. We've all been there where we're maybe like in the supermarket, I'm really, really hungry. I need to make a decision here. And you almost stop and you can feel yourself being pulled one way or the other. What do you practically advise people do either in that moment or to prevent getting to that point?
Yeah, great question. Number one, it is about putting everything in place to minimize the number of moments like that happen, right? And building sort of the structure around it so that when it does happen, we can recognize it. So often that looks like stepping back and fundamentally making sure that we are giving our body nutrition, especially early in the day. Now we can do a whole other bit, you know, here on willpower, but right now in this moment, I want to answer the question of like, how do you prevent that moment of craving? Protein and fiber at every meal. So I have a little phrase because weight management is like my space, but protein and fiber at every meal makes removing fat no big deal. But the truth is protein and fiber is what allows us to have sustained energy every time we eat. So protein is clean, lean protein. I don't care whatever you want it to be, right? Don't eat what you don't like. Don't eat what you don't eat, right? But clean, lean protein. Fiber is vegetables, sometimes fruit. And then a meal is really any time we eat. The only difference between a meal and a snack is how much we have at a time, and then therefore how long it's going to last us, right? How much time till we're going to need to eat something again. The other thing that you want a couple times a day is quality fat. And eventually I will figure out how to get the quality fat into that little statement, but right? So when we give ourselves that fuel of protein and fiber and quality fat, we actually keep our blood sugar stable. And we avoid the spikes and drops of blood sugar that create those cravings, right? It's when our blood sugar is low that we will crave those high glycemic foods, those foods that will raise our blood sugar quickly, right? Because the body is going, I need energy, I need fuel, and I have to do it quickly, which means I need something that turns into fuel fast.
And what goes up must come down.
Right, exactly. And so then we're living on this roller coaster. So the first piece is to just start to actually eat some meals. It's more than you think, right? The old adage of eat less, move more is unfortunately just not how the body works, right? And you don't need a degree to know that 100 calories of M&Ms are going to be different for your body than 100 calories of cucumber. So ignore the volume, right? And focus on the nutrition. So by the way, like a serving size of protein for a woman at a meal is 4 to 6 ounces. A male is 6 to 8 ounces. So that's like your whole hand. not just the palm, like, you know, growing up when I did, of all the diets and the fads. It was like, you know, your palm of your hand size of protein. The palm size is more like 2 to 3 ounces, which is more of a snack size. So I always say this is science, not magic. But I think the piece that's magical is the way the body responds when you give it what it needs. And so one of the things that we see for a lot of my clients, even in the first couple of weeks, is that a lot of these cravings disappear. And then there's an awareness of when they pop up. Oh, I notice that I now get these cravings when I don't sleep well. I notice I get these cravings every time I have a meeting with that guy. Right. And so then we can put some strategies around that meeting or the sleep piece, because now we see when they're popping up for you.
Yeah. Jen, I'm just want to caveat this to everyone listening. We have not discussed this prior to this recording of this episode, but the episode before you go live, I actually go through the framework that I use to structure the majority of my professionals' eating. So my background is architecture. We love planning. We love the visual, love to have a structure in place. I actually went through my ideal framework for a busy professional. And I wonder if you have something similar that we could compare and contrast. This is, as I say, we haven't discussed this before, but I wonder if you have a go-to structure that you find is a good place for a lot of people to start. No, there will be nuance there, but
absolutely. So part of my structure that I say to everybody is guideline, not gospel, right? These are guidelines, and then you're going to figure out what works for you. Okay. So knowing that a serving of protein at a meal for a woman is 4 to 6 ounces and a snack is 2 to 3. We're going to have protein every time we eat. Every time we eat, we're also going to have fiber, whether that's coming from vegetables or fruit, right? Fine. And then quality fat a couple times a day. So a meal of protein, fiber, quality fat is going to last us likely somewhere between like 4 to 5, 5.5 hours. A snack is probably going to last us 1 to 2 hours. Over the course of the day, right, we're going to have protein every time we eat in those proportions. I encourage my clients to have 8 to 12 servings of vegetables a day. Now, I'm not big on measuring and weighing because I did that in my life. It made me feel very obsessive. And I'm not living my life with measuring cups and things in my handbag. So I'm a big fan of your hands, right? We talked about the protein being the whole, protein being the whole hand at a meal, the palm at a snack. A serving of vegetables is generally a handful. If it's greens, call it 2 handfuls is one serving. 8 to 12 vegetables a day, 8 to 12 handfuls of vegetables a day. Fruits on a general, 1 to 2 a day, and like a normal size piece of fruit, not the apple that's the size of your head or, you know, a kumquat, right? Like a general medium sized piece of fruit is good. And then quality fat. So a serving of an avocado is half the avocado. Yes. People always like, fat has gotten such a poor reputation over the years. Like everybody, our body needs fat. Fat serves such a purpose. Our brain is mostly made of fat. There's a whole host of things. But so a serving of avocado is half the avocado. And people come and they're like, oh, well, I had like of a sliver of a quarter of an eighth of the avocado. And it's like, no, eat the avocado. Like you're going to feel so much more satisfied for so much longer. You're going to see a difference in your skin and your energy and your health, all these things when we actually eat quality fat. Mm-hmm. So if you're hitting those benchmarks, right, in terms of across the day, those servings, and we're fueling regularly, I'm good. Mm-hmm. One of the big things in a place to start is breakfast. A protein and fiber packed breakfast is going to set you on a trajectory for energy and vitality every day, all the time. Intermittent fasting has become a thing. My ladies, I love you. Our hormones need fuel. Our hormones need fat. Our hormones need protein and fiber and all the nutrients. The fasting that I'm a really big fan of is dinner to breakfast. So the time that we sleep is our fasting time. But the expectation that we're going to wake up and expect our body to perform and our brain to perform without fuel is setting us up to run on cortisol and adrenaline, and it wreaks havoc on our thyroid and our adrenals and will cause us to hold on to fat. So I know we haven't talked about this, but I'm a big fan of breakfast. Like within an hour of waking up, I want you to get something in your system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's always really, it's great to get someone else's perspective. I agree with you. I think the principle-led approach is the way to go, and adapting those principles around each individual. Breakfast is always one that comes up, isn't it? It's always one for debate. What do you personally do, Jen? Do you eat as soon as you get up?
So the last couple months have been experimenting with having 30 grams of protein within 30 minutes of waking up and then doing 30 minutes of exercise. The protein that I have been using for that, because it's so early, I also have had times where I'm like, I need a minute, right? So figuring out that thing, and it's a little bit of an experiment with myself. So we're just in this moment. I'm using for that a really high quality protein powder that also has some creatine and branched chain amino acids. The purity and quality of this protein makes it really easy. I've had a really easy time having that in the morning. And I will tell you, my energy is amazing. I feel better throughout the day. I notice a difference in cravings. People are saying to me, like, you look great. And I'm like, thanks. I don't even know what I'm doing, right? It's like not much of a tweak, mm-hmm. but it's making a huge difference. So, and that, by the way, is just the protein on its own. Mm-hmm. There isn't, you know, fiber in that. And then later in the morning, because that sort of sustains me for a little while, then later in the morning, I'm having more of like a proper meal. So it has sort of tweaked all of my meal timing because I'm now starting with that. When I worked in an office, my favorite go-to breakfast is an egg white vegetable omelet. And sometimes I'll throw in a little cheese if I feel like it, or sometimes I'll throw in some turkey bacon or whatever it is. But like, you know, for me, eggs, vegetables, a breakfast salad is amazing for me.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate because I don't know if this is just particular to the UK, but the way that I was definitely taught to eat, meals would increase incrementally over the day. So you'd have a smallest meal for breakfast, then a medium-sized lunch, and then you would have your big ass closing. Like that was where you consumed the majority of your energy right at the end of the day. Or you sat down on the sofa. Like that was the way that we were kind of taught to eat.
Totally. Whereas, I think it's not just in the UK, for sure.
Yeah. And I think that it's very hard to move away from that kind of traditional pattern and encourage. Actually, it's okay to eat potentially more at the early part of the day.
Yes.
If that works for you. It's just really interesting to hear other perspectives. Is there anything that you mentioned there about when you were in your professional role? Is there anything that you particularly recommend professionals, either food groups or timing or anything else lifestyle wise, that would have a really positive impact on both mood and energy? Because I think the two are invariably linked.
Absolutely. So one of the big things is exactly what you were saying, of figuring out when do you feel your best? Yeah. Right? You might feel your best when breakfast or lunch is your bigger meal of the day. And we want to sort of eat, like athletes think about eating to fuel performance. Many of us are athletes in our own ways, in our own lives. So when are you asking yourself to perform, and are you fueling that performance, right? How are you fueling that performance? So for me, I felt infinitely better when breakfast and lunch were my bigger meals of the day. I slept better when that was happening. So I think those are big things. And then as you put different meals together or different snacks, notice how long it lasts you. So my egg white vegetable omelet would last me fully through the morning till lunch. You know, I didn't need a morning snack. But if I started the day with some fruit, maybe some yogurt or a protein shake, I needed a morning snack. So then we can look at our calendar for the day and say, okay, my meetings are at times such that I'm not going to have a minute to think about food from morning until 2 o'clock. Well, that's a long time. So I want to make sure that I'm having one of those breakfasts that I know keeps me satisfied for a long time. Versus maybe we know that like we have a big chunk of meetings in the afternoon and we're not going to be able to eat lunch at our typical lunch time. So maybe that means I'm actually going to start the day with more of a snack size, you know, amount of food. I'm going to then have a meal size amount of food a little earlier than I normally would, but it's going to hold me through till maybe 3-4 o'clock when I have time again. Right. And so practicing those things. And if we're pairing the protein, fiber, and quality fat, you'll notice how great you feel. So an awesome snack is maybe, you know, an apple with some nut butter. Right? Your nut butter has a bit of protein, some quality fat. You have fiber from your apple. Your nut butter also has a little bit of fiber in there, right? Maybe it's, I love walnuts. So I would keep walnuts and almonds in my desk, right? Now, if I had a handful of nuts, it was only going to last me maybe like an hour, but I could figure that out. And I could be like, all right, you know what? I can just take these nuts into this meeting. It's not going to be weird, right? Or I actually need to order that thing for lunch that is going to hold me all the way through till I get home at 7-8 o'clock, just because of the way my day goes. So we can then start to think strategically once we know how we respond to some of these different combinations.
I'm laughing. I used to have a protein shaker. It was a steel one. So it just looked like a normal bottle of water. So I could discreetly sip away, but it was brilliant. It had this little thing at the bottom that screwed off and you could put your almonds in there. So when you were in a meeting, you could just like little.
Oh my God, that is genius.
And it was incredible. Jen, I'm going to ask you the question because we've talked about fiber, protein, and fats. Do you know what I'm going to ask you here? Where do carbs fall into this?
Oh,
carbs.
Perfect. Okay. Carbs, my friends, fibers, carbs, right? The major factor between the carbohydrates that our body responds well to and the carbohydrates that our bodies generally don't, you know, respond well to is fiber. Mm-hmm. So your vegetables and fruit are carbs. Most of the time, when people say carbs, what they really mean are grains and starches. So addressing grains and starches, depending on where you are in relation to your health goals, those grains and starches can supplement the other benchmarks that we talked about.
Yeah.
I like to think of grains more like a condiment, mm-hmm. right? So what are other condiments that we use? Maybe it's vinegar or salad dressing or, you know, mustard, right? They're things that add some interest, some flavor, maybe some texture, right? if we can add whole grains into our day in that proportion, like a condiment, we'll be golden. It's the refined, processed, ultra-processed grains that do not serve our health, full stop. The challenge becomes so much of what's available to us are those processed grains. And now, I don't know what it is in the UK, but in the US, the average American eats more grain than an Olympic athlete is recommended to eat on race day.
Wow, that's quite staggering. What I was going to pass comment on was, I don't know if you see this more and more, Jen, I see a lot of plates. We do kind of visual representations of our plates. Yep. See a lot of beige plates. There's a lot of our heavier carbs and a lot of beige plates being constructed. So everything that you've walked through today to this point is very much in line with the changes that we suggest our clients adopt. But yeah, really, really heavy on the beige.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like with when I have a kids and family program, and when we work with the kids, it's like, you know, we've heard it before, eat the rainbow. Right. But for them, it's like, okay, how many colors can you put on a single plate?
Yeah. It's fun.
Right. And by the way, colors indicate different nutrients. So recognizing, even going back to what we were saying before about neurotransmitters and our mood, if we are constantly giving ourselves the same nutrients, eating foods that are all the same color, we are inherently deficient in the raw materials of some of these foods and some of the things that our body needs. So the body responds really well to variety in every way. So not just week to week or throughout the week or even meal to meal, but within a meal, how much variety can you have? And by the way, that also does a lot when it comes to satisfaction. Yeah. Oftentimes there's this thing called sensory specific satiety, which is when we eat the same things all the time, we can get bored. It like doesn't register. We're no longer satisfied. And oftentimes what I see with people is that we make up in volume what we're lacking in the food. So if you notice that you're eating the same things and now you're eating more and more and more of those things to be satisfied, change it up.
Yeah.
If you rarely eat a burger, go eat the burger. I promise you, you're going to feel so satisfied. You might not even finish the whole thing and you're going to feel like a hero.
I also find that if someone has a specific fat loss goal, I sometimes find that the reason the results can sometimes plateau is that they haven't changed up the food groups enough. Now, I'm a massive fan of structure and a massive fan of frameworks, but if someone is eating the same thing over and over and over again, because of that increase in portion size, due to that satiating quality, I sometimes find their results can plateau. Yes. And then when we dive into what the meals now look like, it's just over time they've gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's when the results will stall.
Yeah. And I'll also see with people too, because the body's really smart. Mm-hmm. If we're eating the same breakfast and lunch and most dinners the same, our body will stop burning because it knows exactly what it's going to get at exactly the same time, following the exact same rhythm. And it sort of just says, oh, I got this. Right? Surprising our body can work wonders too. Yeah. And there are a lot of different ways to do that. It actually, like we hear about it with fitness and exercise, right? To change it up so that our body, you know, is surprised by it. It actually doesn't take that much to change it up enough to surprise the body.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a fine line there, isn't there? Because someone asked me the other, I think it was at the start of the year, they said, well, should I change it up so I shock my body into change with my training in January? It's like, you don't need to shock. Nothing needs to.
Right.
I'm quite like, I don't like the extremes in any direction, Jen. It's a bit of my coaching style, but
100%.
Do quite as much. Maybe just switch out your vegetables that week, or, you know, eat at a slightly different time based around your meetings, as you've talked about, which I think is a really practical thing for a lot of professionals who will sometimes say things like, you know, I don't have time to prioritize my health, or I live a very sedentary lifestyle, or I have lots going on. You can still adjust around a changing schedule and a changing diet for sure. Jen, I want to ask you about willpower.
Perfect.
Very bluntly, is it a real thing?
It is real. Willpower is real. The challenge is we have a big misconception around it. So think of willpower as like a cup of water, right? That cup is only so big and it doesn't change size on its own. And if we don't refill the cup, that water level is going to go down as we drink from it, right? Willpower is a finite resource in the body. Every choice that we need to make, anything that requires self-awareness or self-control or considering multiple things at once, drinks from that cup of willpower. So the thing that I see most of all, first of all, by the way, it's why breakfast is a much easier meal to have, quote unquote, on plan than dinner. Because for most people, by the end of the day, that willpower cup is empty and we haven't done enough to refill it so that there's something left for evening. Yep. Right? Most people, and especially, right, like exactly who we're talking to, like you are crushing it in life, right? You are ticking the boxes. You are incredibly successful. It's not that you don't have willpower. It's that all of that cup is going toward the work decisions, the family decisions, the coordination of the schedules, right? And we can go through a lot of the things that deplete that willpower. It's not that we don't have it. It's that we're using it in other places. Mm-hmm. And then when we expect to have something left to use for our food choices, there's nothing in the cup. And then we think we failed, which we haven't. It actually makes total sense, right? So a few of the things that deplete willpower and drink from that cup. Anytime you resist a desire, drinks from that cup. So now think about it. There's conscious resisting, right? I'm not eating the free food in the kitchen at work. And then there's the ones that we don't even realize. We walked past a restaurant and smelled food. We walked past a store, saw some shoes that we like, and we were like, I'm not buying shoes right now, right? All these different things. Anytime we resist any desire or make a decision, it drinks from our willpower cup. Multitasking drinks a lot from that cup. And if you are anything like me, right, we are multitaskers. We pride ourselves on being multitaskers, sometimes to a fault, right? And interesting, you know, our hormones play a role. So different times of the month, we have, you know, more or less willpower because things are drinking from it. And I think one of the really interesting things is that low blood sugar depletes our willpower. So it is no coincidence that when you have tried that eat less mentality, those cravings get big and strong and it feels like we have no willpower. Because without blood sugar, that cup is empty, mm-hmm. right? Like we can't think straight in order to have a thought process other than sugar to replenish.
I remember hearing about a study on this. You're probably familiar with it, Jen, the one they did on the judges in the...
Yes, exactly. In
where they basically yes. watched the trends of whether they let people off or whether they sentenced them based on the yes. time that the individual went in. And if you were unfortunate enough to see your judge just before lunchtime, the chances
bad time.
That you were condemned... Whereas if you saw them yeah. after lunchtime when they'd topped up their blood glucose, you were much likely right. to get off, which if
yeah. First thing in the morning, first thing after lunch, great times to be before a judge, right? And it's the interesting thing too, it was whether or not they were sentenced and even like the severity of the sentence.
Yeah.
And when you think about it for yourself, right, because we're not all judges and most of us are not ending up in court. But what we can think about it as, when we have that low blood sugar in those moments, what's driving that the judge's choice is the subconscious desire to maintain status quo, to go back to what is comfortable. So for us, if we have an old habit, right, that's our status quo.
Yeah.
That's our maintaining safety. So again, it's not that you don't have willpower. It's not that you suck at building new habits. It's that we're expecting something that is physiologically near impossible in certain moments.
Jen, I'll ask you, because this is something that I've been toying with a little bit recently, and it's more to do with building up more resilience. And do you think there's some merit in being faced with a challenging situation, being faced with a craving or a desire to do something, resisting it and really building up, using it as a positive rather than sometimes I think we look at cravings as though they are, you know, the demons or it's the worst thing that could happen, but actually choosing to frame it as, okay, this is a little bit of a challenge. I'm just going to rise to this and actually feel stronger out the other side of that. Do you know where I'm going?
Yes, 100%. 100%. And the research backs this up too, but I'll take a step back to say, yes, 1,000%. This is growth. This is our own development, right? This is, cravings aren't bad. Cravings are just one way that our body communicates with us. So part of this process is to learn to decode the body's communication. Cravings are one of those. So sometimes that's easier than others. Sometimes it causes us to just reflect later, right? And say, okay, let me go back to that. Like, what happened right before I ate the cookie dough? What was going on? Right? What triggered that? One of my favorite questions to ask is, where am I not being fed? Am I not being, like, do I not have time to myself? And I can only justify time to myself if I'm eating? Am I just really stressed out and I need a break? Maybe we also just didn't sleep enough because when we are sleep deprived, when we don't have quality sleep or long enough sleep, the body doesn't respond to a hormone called leptin that tells us when we're satisfied and we can be done eating. So maybe I'm not getting sleep. Maybe, right? Like, we can look and say, what's happening? And there's in eating disorder therapy and disordered eating therapy, one of the tools is to learn to ride the wave, to experience the craving as something as just an experience and see what happens. You know, and that it's also, I don't know if anybody are meditators, but it's one of the big things that I learned. Years ago, I was like, I'm sorry, I don't meditate. I can't meditate. I need somebody to, like, distract me to the point that I can't think about anything else, right? Now, what I've come to learn is that meditation is not about controlling the mind. Meditation is about observing the mind.
Yeah.
And so riding the wave of that craving is about this observation, right? Reflecting on a moment of craving is that self-awareness and observation of what's happening.
It also puts you more in control, because I think people who have not been able to do that, they start to panic because it's the, oh, will I feel cravings? How will I respond to those cravings? When will they hit me? What will I want? There's a sort of lack of control around it. Whereas if you can flip that around and say, okay, I know what this feels like. I know how I respond in these situations because of my past experience. I've proved to myself I respond via X, Y, and Z. And that really only comes with practice, doesn't it, over time?
Yeah. And then there's even, like, what I was saying before of, I would walk into the kitchen at work and the croissant would have a voice and it would be talking to me. And then eventually I'd give in and it's like, why can't I just not eat the croissant? But then when I figured out, right, that we will crave sugar a lot of the time when we are deficient in protein, right? Mm-hmm. I walked into that kitchen one day and I was like, oh my God, The croissant is appealing because I am hungry. I haven't eaten my breakfast yet. What I really need is the protein that I brought. Let me have the breakfast that I brought, and then I'll see how I feel about the croissant.
Yeah.
It's all of those pieces. Yeah.
All connected. Jen, I'm conscious of your time today, and I want to say a huge thank you for joining us on the podcast. I think we really have just gone to the tip of the iceberg of your...
I know. There are so many things, because I can't leave you without ways to, like, refill your cup, right?
Well, that was going to be my question, actually. One here. How do you refill the cup? Please tell us.
Okay. Exercise and activity can refill the cup. Eating nutrition can refill the cup, right? Interestingly, accountability can refill the cup. Making a game out of things, right? How many apps do we have that are trying to gamify things? Refills the cup. Gratitude refills the cup. Distraction refills the cup. So if you are trying to ride that wave of a craving, move on. Pick another activity. I'm not saying you have to keep trying to do something that requires a ton of brain power, but distract yourself for a few minutes and see what happens. To-do lists, right? Getting things out of our head, not multitasking, right? Recognizing consequences and rewards can refill our cup. Working with a coach, right? A different kind of accountability, somebody to guide and help with that self-awareness can refill that cup. Think about a few of these things. Write them on a post-it note. And in any given moment, just pick one and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. Pick another one, because what works today may not work in an hour or tomorrow, and that's okay. The trick is to have enough tools in our tool belt that we can just keep pulling things out when we need it and keep moving forward in our lives.
I love that. Absolutely love it. Jen, thank you so much for your insight today. After this, I know people will want to find out more about you and your message. Where are the best places to find you?
Oh, thank you so much. This was such a pleasure. My podcast is Salad with a Side of Fries. Website is asaladwithasideoffries.com. And all social media, I am at Jen Trepek, JenTrepek. Please send a message. Like, I love nothing more than hearing from you. And if we didn't, I'll make sure that you get a link for all of your listeners to get a complimentary discovery call.
Amazing.
If they want to chat more about their specifics.
All of that in the show notes. So if anyone wants to find you, all of the links will be there. And Jen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen, so much for your contribution to this episode of Health Hacks this week. It was an absolute pleasure to have Jen on. She's so much energy, and I really like the way that she presents her ideas and bringing some new themes and ideas to the podcast, which is fantastic. It really, really is. Having recorded the episodes that we have in and had the wonderful guests on that we have, another thing that I really does give me a lot of, it really puts fuel in the fire and really confirms to me that Health Hacks is just, it's my passion project, if you can't tell. But I love when we have a guest on who comes on and they really reinforce a theme or an idea that we've discussed with someone else. It's like this amazing hub or community or a platform for voices that are sharing in a similar vision. And it just, yeah, like I say, it just puts fuel in my fire. So this reinforcing of ideas or strengthening them or phrasing them in a different way is something that is really fantastic. And I'm just so thankful to Jen for her contribution. As ever, if you did enjoy this episode of the podcast, thank you so much for joining us. Really, sincerely, I know you could be listening to 101 different platforms at the moment, so the fact that you choose to spend your time with us is hugely appreciated. And if you would like to show your support, hit the subscribe or the follow button on Apple or Spotify, whichever you're listening to me on. It's probably one of those two. Obviously costs absolutely nothing. Health Hacks is our contribution to spread free health and wellness advice as far and wide as we possibly can. So if you do want to show support, that's a wonderful way to do it, or send it to someone in your inner circle. Perhaps there's someone in your life who's looking to make positive changes. They're not really sure where to start. They're maybe not in a position where they want to get a PT yet, or a coach, or, you know, invest in a gym membership or workouts, or they're really not sure where to start. Podcasts are a wonderful way to get involved and just to scout out the space a little bit more. So I hope this has been valuable. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week on the Health Hacks Podcast.